Where did you get the idea for the LED?
The
like what inspired?
We all knew about for a long time. We knew that a semiconductor would generate light. But before quantum physics and before the transistor and all that, you don't know that you can put a current into a crystal and that you are upsetting the equilibrium in such a way that there would be a transition that would be a light generator. And then as part of the transistor studies and all that, we studied the stuff like that, and we knew that there were light emitters, but they weren't very good. And in the process of increasing the speed of the transistor, we started working on newer materials that had special properties. And one of the properties was that this process that generated light was more efficient in some of the materials. So some fellows at Lincoln Labs, that was part of MIT, supported by the Air Force, had looked at just an ordinary kind of an item, and they found that there's quite a bit of infrared coming out. And some of us went home from that meeting thinking, how do we turn a semiconductor into a laser? See, ruby rod could be a laser, a gas could be a laser, and that's demonstrated by some people in 1960. And here, my colleague at Lincoln Labs says, we don't recruit good students anymore because they're all enamored with the laser. And then he's laughing later when we make a laser because we could equal them. And actually, as a matter of fact, probably the semiconductor laser at this point exceeds all the other lasers. Everywhere where the semiconductor works, it wins. But at any rate, I went home with the idea that I don't like working in the infrared. Bell Labs can have it, but I don't agree with them. I mean, they were giants, they did nice things, but they frequently were wrong. And they were working with gallium phosphide, which was a poor emitter. And because the charge you're going to annihilate is over here in momentum, and the thing you're going to annihilate is over here, and a photon doesn't have much momentum. For the physicists, you understand this. And at any rate, I went home and tried to change that crystal. I had been working with a crystal where I had changed it. I had shifted it up in energy, but over here where the transition was strong, and I knew I could work in the red. So I went home, and I thought I'd beat everybody. My colleague in Schenectady got a little bit ahead of me, and he got the infrared laser working before I got my red laser working. When I got a red laser, I know that I have a very powerful way to generate light, and that is the direction in which to go to open up the whole field of light-emitting diodes. And that worked. But I didn't think it'd take 50 years. I thought we could do it faster, but we didn't. And see, when you ask what's left for the young people, believe me, we've got nothing but problems left behind, and you can sure come up with better ideas because older people begin to decay in the idea sense. And you young people are bound to be able to do better work because you can push further.
So what does cause the different colors in LEDs?
The color change? There's an energy change that you could build into these materials, and you have to change materials and go up higher in the periodic table of elements. You have to go higher to the lighter elements. And as you go up there, you can shift the properties, and it's the same family of materials, same family of problems, same methods of attack and all that, but you have to go find the recipes that work and the ideas that work, and it takes time. We shift the chemistry of the materials. We shift the atoms. Jerry.
Nick, I have a couple of important questions.
Yeah.
One, do you still work out of Kenny Gin?
Jerry, I did until May, and I still snuck in June, and then I started to hurt and it started getting hot, so I began to get a little bit lax about it. I was delighted that Murph was here from the gym because those are my buddies, and I haven't quite given up the idea yet because I keep thinking that maybe I can get this wobble out of me and I can get up there and still work out with my friends.
The other question I have is, whatever happened to that beat-up old pair of copper-plated shoes?
They're in the lab. I had these shoes that when I reduced part of my exercises and then wanted to go in the weight room, I always shifted to these other shoes. I liked them. And they were getting decrepit, they were getting worn out, and I bring them down to the lab and with the drill press drill some holes in there and put some wire through there to keep them together and all that. And finally, I gave up. They were 20 or 30 years old or more, and I finally gave up. And I threw them in the trash, and one of the guys, there was a fellow who was a preacher in town, a black fellow, and Bob West. And Bob says, "Where's your shoes?" I said, "Well, I gave them the heave-ho, and they finally gave up." And he says, "I wanted to take them and show them to some people and let them know that you don't just buy new stuff over and over and over. You wear out what you got." And what I didn't know was that some colleagues had grabbed up those shoes and had sent them off somewhere where you get that stuff bronzed, and they stayed in the gym for I don't know how long, and then when things were falling apart, and I thought, well, they're going to get thrown out, so I just take them back to the lab, and so this is more of the junk that's in the lab. They exist.
Nick, we have a special request. Your name is Kelsey?
Yeah.
She has to go study, but she would like to shake your hand.
Oh, sure. sure. Where do you work? What do you do?
Oh, I'm just a transfer sophomore.
That's all right. That's where you start. I was a transfer sophomore. And that's where I started.
Very nice to meet you. Yeah. Thank you.
Nick, could you do an autograph for her real quickly?
Yeah, yeah.
So Kelsey, K-E-L-S-E-Y?
How?
K-E-L-S-E-Y.
There we go. Over here? And then I'll come that way. I thought I heard one over there.
Thanks.
Okay. Did you wonder that the LED was going to be such an important invent in human history?
Where are you? Oh, yeah. Well, the reason to do it was, you see, the reason I didn't want to work in the infrared was I wanted to work where humans see. And how many humans are we talking about? Sure. I worked when I left school for a man by the name of John Maul. You who are EE students have studied, when you study transistors, the Ebers-Moll equations. That's the Moll I'm talking about. Wonderful guy. He had more to do with moving silicon technology from New Jersey to California than Shockley. That's another big, long story. But at any rate, he was an advisor at one point when he left Bell. He was at Stanford and then moved around a little bit. But he was an advisor to Dave Packard. And he told Packard of Hewlett-Packard. All these meter movements and the Nixie tubes. Nixie tubes are little gas tubes that were in the first computers that would show you 1, 2, 3, 4 and all that kind of stuff. And he says all that's going to go because a semiconductor will emit light. Now, there weren't good light emitters. They weren't efficient. They weren't real good. And he advised Packard to get into this. At JE, we were working on this kind of stuff, and I was the guy that was shifting the chemistry from infrared to red, where we see. The whole point in working where we see is because of us, that readouts and indicators and maybe eventually lighting, because it's a special way to generate light. It isn't inefficient the way other things are, but it is inefficient if you're not working on the right stuff. Maul is advising Packard that there's a few people who are into this, and let's get them hired and be part of the startup. I almost went to be part of Hewlett-Packard's startup, but then I didn't like something he was doing in a business sense, and I stayed at GE and made the stuff that you folks see, but mine started out first as a laser. Now, that's just a special form of an LED, but if it works at that level, that's a message that says, it goes further. Now, how you get there is more work, and something for all of us. Yes, you can see that coming, but you don't know exactly how and when and all that. If Bardeen were alive and you ask him, when you had the first transistor, do you see that it's going to be the chip and all that kind of stuff? And John would slowly wag his head like this. If Shockley, you asked him the question, oh, yes. But, of course, he was wrong because you could look at the many mistakes he made and say, uh-uh, buddy. No. No one can see that much that far. It's not possible. You have to work your way to that point. So you think it's going to happen, but you don't know how it's going to happen. You've got to work to do that.